Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So tomorrow the launch of the 2017 All-Ireland Hurling Championship is happening at Croke Park, and as part of it, sponsors Bord Gáis Energy have kicked off their hashtag Hurling to the Core campaign, where they're talking to various non-GAA people about their passion for the sport. Simon Zeebo is a Hurling to the Core ambassador, and he popped into studio earlier on and he was in great form, as he said himself, and I put it to him that he always seems to be in great form. Something that Ronan O'Gara, when Zeebo came into Munster, took a while to get used to.
Yeah, definitely took a long time.
He was looking at you in the weights room and there was far too happiness going, far too much happiness and fun. He was like, this guy's not taking his work seriously.
Yeah, that was exactly it. He thought I was a bit of a show pony or something, but he just didn't get me, didn't understand me. And yeah, I just try and cruise through every day inside work, so try and make it as much fun as possible, but that's something he found hard to explain or understand at the very beginning, no doubt.
I remember him twigging, he said he twigged it a while in. This is what he needs to do to get through the work.
Yeah.
If Zeebo's going around miserable and it's a grind, you're not going to be doing your best stuff, I guess.
No, that's exactly it. Yeah, I need to kind of express myself and, train and play with a smile on my face, because that's when I'm at my best. So
who are the guys in the weights room that you're hanging around with?
Francis Sayili would be one.
Oh, yeah. Did you do anything in a car with Francis Sayili?
We had a little carpool karaoke thing.
And you found out he'd been kidnapped as a child.
Exactly.
Yes,
yeah. Very strange, actually.
But
he's a pretty easygoing character as well. And I try and rope one or two others in, like Peter O'Mahony and stuff, but he's soon to tell me where to go.
I would have thought O'Mahony would be fairly intense.
You think you'd have him with and then he just
in the Raj school.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
This is Munster. You get a chip on your shoulder and get it on that shoulder now.
Yeah, exactly the way it was. Yeah, that's the old generation anyway.
The reason you're here is because Bord Gáis Energy have roped you into hashtag Hurling to the Core. So Bord Gáis Energy, I think everyone knows, are sponsoring the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. Mm. They have looked around for sports people who we know for other sports, but who had a deep love of hurling. I didn't realise and you feature in a pretty cool video where you're talking about your relationship with hurling, which we'll tweet out. I didn't realise that hurling was kind of on a par with rugby for you until you were like as old as 16, 17.
Oh yeah, massively. Even probably more, I would have loved it more than rugby at times, especially around championship. But I think the decision around 16 or 17, when I was deciding my future and which sport I wanted to continue, it could only be one. You could only dedicate myself to one anyway at that age. So, we were just finishing the hurling season, and funny enough, it was coming into School's Cup time of the year. And
you went to Prez?
Yeah, I went to Prez. So, the buzz with Prez Christians around Cork and everybody wanting to win a Munster Schools Championship. And, that really kind of swayed me in the direction of rugby.
Right. What position did you play in hurling?
It would have been centre field or centre forward as well. So,
wow, Blackrock.
Blackrock, yeah. And it was probably, I still have great friends playing hurling. And, back when I was starting to play, there would have been Fergal Ryan, Wayne Sherlock, all these Cork superstars. So, it was one of my dreams to play for Cork at senior level. But Raj and Axel were just after lifting the Heineken Cup trophy, so that's why my decision, I think.
Yeah, and like, did Munster chase you hard? Did rugby chase you hard?
Rugby chased me, yeah. Not necessarily Munster, but rugby chased me. Right. I was schools, teachers were trying to give me advice and coaches, and, on the other side, I had my hurling coaches trying to swing me that way, so.
Yeah. I would think in Prez it's not overly easy to say, I'm leaving the rugby.
It's like religion.
It is.
It's like rugby in Limerick. It's crazy, and it's from a sporting point of view, it's not the be all and end all, but it's a massive part of Prez's culture and sport. So to be, winning senior cups and schools trophies was something I really wanted to do.
Because I don't know if you've seen Handsome Devil, that new film which is out. Have you seen that?
No,
the trailers.
No.
It's about a rugby obsessed school, and the writer and director John Butler was in last night. He went to Black Rock, and he was telling us that like in Black Rock, when they were having a good run in the senior cup, there would be compulsory cheerleading practice for the students.
Yeah, we had that too.
Ah, for God's sake.
I swear.
It's such a cult.
I know.
I didn't go to a rugby school. I just can't understand this.
Oh, we had, hours in fourth, all the way up. I think every class did it, right, when it would come to cup time, you know, the Februarys and Marches. Oh my God, it was incredible. The support chants throughout the whole game, and you have to know the words or you're in trouble.
Well, like, so you don't have to sing it, but give me what would be a verse, or what would be kind of some of the bigger songs?
There was one song we had was the praise song, like the rugby song. It was kind of like an oggy, oggy, oggy kind of song, but you know, it just evolved, and you know, it's like it's every praise game you go to, it's the song the kids sing. So it's a bit of tradition there, right?
Yeah. Line squad, how hopeful were you? You must have felt you were right in the mix.
Yeah, I was. Very hopeful, you know. It's obviously a dream to play for the Lions and things like that, and every player wants to go, you know. But it wasn't meant to be. So I just have to take it how it is and, you know, roll the sleeves up and go again.
You know the way they send out like a letter to an extended squad earlier in the year where they get everything from like insurance forms and different things you have to sign?
Yeah.
Did you get one of those letters?
Yeah. Okay. But there's probably 200 or 300 players get them.
Well,
you know?
Maybe. I mean, there wouldn't be that. How many?
Over 100 anyway.
Would there be?
Easily,
okay,
yeah.
So that's not that you don't get too excited about
No.
Okay.
You still get excited when you receive a letter from the British and Irish Lions, but you wouldn't be saying, oh, don't book holidays here. Like, you know?
Yeah. You obviously went out as cover for Bo, I think. Tony Bo, 4 years ago. How did you find Gatland? Did you feel like you made an impression on him? Did you talk too much? Fairly quiet by all accounts.
Yeah. He would have been quite quiet, but he's a great coach. Like, he knows his detail really well, and he's really good at getting players, you know, ready for a game. But there wasn't too much opportunity to impress by the matches, you know, because I would have been playing in a couple of the midweek games, but they went well for me. It's just when you're coming out late onto the tour, you're probably, you wouldn't be as close to the firing line as some of the people who were initially picked, which is understandable, obviously. But it was a great experience, and hopefully the lads enjoy it now who are down there.
Yeah, and I guess you keep your phone on, because
I never know.
You just never know.
Yeah.
I watched the Living with Lions from 2013, and Andy Farrell comes across amazingly in it.
Great guy.
Really, really great speaker.
Yeah, he is incredible. Yeah, an incredible motivator, an incredible coach. He has some knowledge of the game, considering his background and being majority of it rugby league.
Yeah.
But wow, he's a great coach.
Yeah, one of the standout moments in that Living with Lions. It's one of the best Living with Lions moments is when you get fined for the Conor Murray thing. I mean, it's just ridiculous behaviour from you.
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous. All right.
In short, you tell Conor Murray, kick it out, time's up. He kicks it out. There's 30 seconds left. He turns to look at you and you're laughing.
Yeah. I was laughing at the whole situation, I think. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
It's wonderful because it's great that you're still, you don't have professionalism so beaten into you that you couldn't find some humour in it.
Yeah.
But at the same...
And it was a tight game at half time. Like, I was thinking back at it now, it's probably a bit mad, but it's another memory that you won't forget about, definitely.
Can you remember what possessed you to do that?
I didn't think he'd listen to me.
Right. Okay.
I thought there's no way he's going to listen to me here. And I was just like, yeah, kick it out. And I kind of turned around, and next thing you know, he's looking at me with a very angry stare, and I just can't help but laugh. So, it was a funny situation. Thankfully, they didn't score after that, because I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Less funny then, although wonderful when you do ring Rob Penny to ask him to be captain, and he calls you right back, and the whole room's there. I mean, people have seen the clip, I'm sure. He helps you out by realising it's a bet.
Yeah, and he knows there's no way I'd be calling asking to be captain. That was a funny moment as well. Jeez, he took it well though.
He did.
Especially considering he was on holidays with his family and didn't need to call me back straight away, which would have helped me. But he did, and the lads got a kick out of it.
I was at the Saracens game, and I know obviously hugely disappointing for Munster. You personally had a real stormer of a game.
Thank you very much.
Really good. I mean, even like there's that standout moment where obviously their defence is kind of impenetrable and you decide to boot one 20 yards down the field and get after it and get up and catch it. This kind of electric moment. And I don't need to tell you that there was two classic Munster lads in front of me. And it's fair to say something along the lines of, I hope Warren Gatland saw that was was streamed up by them. I presume you're motivated enough anyway for a semi-final at the Aviva against Saracens, but was there any small part of you that's thinking, I'm going to go out and prove a point here? Is that, can you think like that? Do you work? Does motivation work like that for you?
It does, yeah. Of course, yeah. You're not trying to prove anybody wrong or anything, but you're just trying to go out and prove to yourself, you know, that you're capable of performing on the highest level against the best players, and whether that's internationally or with Munster, you just try and give the best of yourself. And like, if you're happy, if I'm happy with my performance after something like that, then I know I can go toe to toe with anyone. Yeah. That's enough.
Would something like the Lions omission and even the build up to waiting for the announcement, it, like, force a lot of introspection? How good a player am I? Does Gatland rate me? Am I at that level? Like, it strikes me it's a process which could actually affect a player's confidence very easily.
Oh, I'd imagine so, yeah. But I tend to be quite thick skinned in that way. I'm a very happy-go-lucky kind of guy, so there's not much that can get me down. Even if I was disappointed, I'm not going to lie, everybody was disappointed if they weren't selected, but it is what it is. And, you know, we're in a very fortunate position to be able to call rugby our profession, so we just got to go out and enjoy every training session and every game.
So criticism has to be pretty severe to affect you, generally.
Oh, yeah. It would want to come from my grandmother or my parents or my missus. So, yeah.
Right, so what's in a Sunday paper? Irrelevant.
No,
just
absolutely
noise.
Not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you read them? Would you?
Unless I was in a waiting room or something, right, and they were there, yeah.
Okay. And if someone said to you, geez, you got a paste in the paper today, wouldn't we go out of your way to check it out?
No, not really. Right. I actually used to always say, you're never as good as they say you are, and you're never as bad as they say you are. So, unless it's in a review meeting of coaches or players and people say, well done here, or criticise you for something different, then it just flies over your head, really.
You bring up Axel. Mm. Does that day in Paris feel like a million years ago for everybody? Well, for you, I guess you can't speak for everybody. Does it feel like a million years ago or very recent? Or
yeah, it's kind of strange because... I don't know. It's just like it's so relevant and it's so... like it's not gone away anywhere, you know. It's every time we walk into our new training center, you're thinking of that day, or you're thinking of him, or whatever it may be. But the journey we're on as a squad together, he's fully embedded in that and has a big role to play in our success. So it doesn't seem a million miles away, but we know where we're going is hopefully in a good place as a result of him.
It's even quite telling that you just plucked a piece of advice he gave you there a moment ago.
It's strange, but just little things like that, you know, on an everyday basis still come back at you, and it's a bit weird.
Yeah, we had Gerry Flannery in the show, and he was just so eloquent about the whole thing, and he was talking about how, like, when he was in first year in school, Axel was in sixth year. And so from the age of 12 in his life, Axel's been this kind of heroic figure to him. And, you know, he was talking about having to phone teammates that morning, Wallace and Stringer and these guys, who were saying, well, what are you talking about? You know, the shock of it is kind of even hard to imagine, because it's just completely out of nowhere. It's the last thing you could ever even think was going to happen that morning.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was a whirlwind. It was one of the strangest days of my life, to be honest. One minute you're preparing for a game, and then the next minute you're hit with a bombshell. And yeah, it's just incredibly difficult to take. And especially for people like Gerry, who would have dealt with him for such a long time, how people like that must have been able to process it is, I can only imagine it being very, very tough. And
yeah. Donal Callan was talking about how he went into the dressing room after the Glasgow game, in effect, to like thank the players. He felt embarrassed about it afterwards. He apologised to Gerry. He felt it was almost like an imposition. He shouldn't have been there. But it meant so much to him, that Glasgow performance as a Munster player. What was that day like? That 24 hours like?
Crazy.
Because we haven't had a player on the show talking about that 24 hours yet, actually.
Yeah. With
Gerry on, and, you know, he had no idea how you were going to play that day as a team.
I didn't either. Right. Yeah, we could have easily gone out and been hockeyed by 50 points, no problem. Everybody's headspace was all messed up, or emotions were... you can only imagine. It's like in a washing machine or something. But
it's hard to know if you were going to be drained or pumped up when it came to game time.
Yeah, and that's how special the support is. It's how special our coaching staff is. And, you know, we were brought together and focused all our energy and what we have or had left of it in the right direction, and that was into putting in a mega performance that he'd be proud of. And I said after, nobody was going to beat us that day, and I stand by that. Whether it was the All Blacks we were playing, they weren't going to beat us. Like, so yeah, it was a strange one, because it wasn't a more emotional roller coaster that week, but thankfully we channeled it in the right direction.
Yeah. Are you happy with Munster's season generally?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be.
Proud, yeah. Yeah. Considering where we were, you know, the team in transition who weren't performing to the best of their ability, and you know, we were just missing an ingredient that was probably a bit more togetherness, you know, and you know, we were our squad is, our unity is as tight as ever, and we got players in key positions playing really, really well. And, we got great momentum this season, so it would be really nice to finish it off with a trophy.
Yeah, for sure. To what extent has the one training base made any difference?
Oh, big time as well, yeah.
Right.
Seeing each other every day is a massive difference, as opposed to seeing the Limerick lads once a week, you know.
It was once a week,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah. It's crazy thinking back at how we got by, you know, and how successful the past teams were. But... yeah, hopefully it's the start of a different generation and a successful one.
Because I did read in Paul O'Connell's book, he did kind of say towards the end of his career, it did strike him, he wasn't as close with the lads, that he just wasn't seeing him. Perfectly normal, but also crazy in a team.
Yeah, absolutely crazy, yeah. It's totally different now. We have all our meals together. We spend time together after rugby as well.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. There's such a stronger bond there. It's only the players who were there before know how much the performance centre has helped.
Right.
And the new guys didn't just think it's normal and everyday business, but it's a massive change.
Have you been conscious of the fans coming back to Thomond?
Yeah.
Because like, that was a bad, by Munster standards.
Yeah.
It was a bad 2-3 years, attendances, and just the chemistry between the players and the fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We were probably finding ourselves as players and as a group of players and as a squad, and probably the Munster fans, I don't know, they, you know, usually they can relate to a team, you know, or whether it's and they didn't know what team we were, and we didn't even know, and I think now we found ourselves, and no doubt, look, they're back again as selling out loads of matches, which is great, and the support is as strong as ever, and fans are relating to the team, and they see the heart and character we have, whether we win, lose or draw, and it's great, because that's what Munster rugby is all about.
Yeah. I didn't realise until recently your father was such an athlete. So I was reading, he's Martinique, is that
Martinique,
the island, and then he went to France at 19 to do his military service.
Yeah.
And would have ran at the 76 Montreal Games.
Yeah.
But for a broken leg.
A broken leg, parachuting, during his army service.
Oh dear, right.
I know. He doesn't like to talk about it either.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
You don't get to be an Olympian every day.
No. It's something... he is proud of it, obviously, that he qualified, but yeah, it's nightmare stuff that you break your leg a couple of months before the games and don't get to compete, and then have to watch the Olympics. So at least he passed on his genes in the right direction to myself and my sister.
Yeah, your sister's a brilliant runner as well.
Yeah, she was a great runner. She had to retire due to injury, and she was ravaged with injuries, but which is unfortunate, but she still managed to represent Ireland on numerous occasions and compete in European championships, etc. So very talented. Now her talent is working elsewhere.
Yeah. A stupid question, which I'm sure you've never asked your dad. When he lands and he breaks the leg, did he not fall properly? Are you not meant to, like, roll over in some kind of way?
Yeah. He wasn't highly trained at that stage, I don't think.
But so he was just early on in the parachuting?
Yeah, he just pulled his cord or his chute too late, and his impact was harder than it should have been. And, sayonara to the Olympics.
Right. And how does he go from France to Ireland, or how does all that happen?
He meets my mother, DJing in a Paris nightclub, and
so your mother's in Paris.
My mother's in Paris with her best friend,
just for a week or two, or
a couple of months. Sorry, she was over for a summer, and she caught the love bug and the Zeebo charm. It charmed her, and my dad was living in Ireland then the following year, and
right,
my sister came along shortly after.
What kind of year was that?
It would have been 84, 85.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did he find that transition from France to Ireland and settling into a completely different culture?
Tough, I'd imagine. Yeah. He says it was tough. I never forget, he tells a very funny story about meeting my grandparents for the first time.
Right.
And my mother brought him home and he was wearing a tuxedo, a white tuxedo, the first time he had ever met them, and she was kind of showing him off. And my granddad had probably never seen a black man before, not to mind the guy showing up in a tux trying to take my mom out without a word of English. So,
wow.
Yeah, funny story, but he managed to charm his way into the family anyway.
The tuxedo, wow, okay.
White tuxedo, that's, yeah, impressive, isn't it?
At least you would know he's making an effort.
Yeah, white tuxedo and an afro. Fair play to him.
So for you growing up, because I've never heard you talk about this, I kind of wondered from afar. I presume there weren't many other kids who weren't kind of white with red hair and chubby around Cork at that time.
Yeah, there weren't. And I was a dime a dozen back then. But it would have been, I would have had a great childhood, you know, but I would have had to find myself probably earlier than most kids, and had a few one-on-one chats with my dad and my parents. So,
as in because you were getting stick or...
Yeah, a little bit of stick, a little bit of slagging or whatever. But, you know, at that age, it's innocence. Like, kids don't really understand what they're saying. So you take it how it is. But, my parents would have had a good background in dealing with that kind of stuff. So I was well-educated early on.
Right. Because it's funny, we'd Lee Chin in here and he spoke brilliantly. And he said two things which kind of... struck me. One, he said his dad could still walk down, you know, Wexford Street and still, there's some idiot who might still say something stupid, which is kind of depressing thought in 2017. And the other thing he said was, whenever he did get abuse, and I thought it was a terrible, just it struck me, he said, you would instantly feel embarrassed and kind of self-conscious as opposed to the idiot who was saying it. And that kind of stayed with me because I thought, God, that's another terrible aspect of that dynamic where someone's abusing someone else and it's the victim who would feel self-conscious and it never really occurred to me before. Would you have had many experiences like that, or was it...
Yeah, I would have had a few, but like every person would deal with it differently, and I'm sure Lee would have dealt with it differently.
Yeah.
But my father used to always just tell me to, if someone does something stupid, then just to smile at them and laugh and walk away, because that's exactly what they don't want. So,
right.
Yeah.
That easy to do? Or just, like, would you have a
tough
temper,
yeah, sometimes,
temper on you?
Yeah. If you catch me on the wrong day, I'd have no problem going up to you and let's go. But it's, you just learn to control it the older you get. And just smile at them and walk away. They're either stupid or uneducated or both. So, it's just my way of dealing with it.
In your experience, do you feel like we're in a good place from the point of view of racism in this country?
Yeah, I do, yeah. It could be different for someone else in Cork, you know, as opposed to me, but from my end, I haven't experienced anything like that, even if I go places where people don't know me in a long, long time.
Right.
Years, so, I think Irish people have definitely evolved, and it's great.
Yeah.
Hopefully that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask you finally about... Joe Schmidt in Ireland. The consensus is you've had to win Joe Schmidt's trust. Say the 2014 Six Nations, you don't play a minute. It's Dave Kearney and Trimble.
Mm.
You know, excellent players, very steady, not risk takers. You're the risk taker. What was your early feeling in that situation with Joe and, you know, his attention to detail specifically and how you approach rugby? Was the consensus from the outside correct, wrong, right?
Yeah, it probably was, yeah. I haven't had to change my game or anything, but I've had to adapt a little bit.
Okay.
Just in terms of the smaller, finer details. Like, I'll never stop taking risks or anything like that, no matter if I don't play for Cork on, you know, so
really, it's almost a point of principle.
Oh yeah, I'll never change that.
I'd rather not play than just go out and my job to be just hit rooks. So.
As opposed to not enjoying the game, I'd rather not play. So
right, I didn't know you felt that strongly about it.
And it's all about enjoyment for me. That's the reason why I started playing the game, was because I enjoy it so much and I love having fun. As soon as the fun's out of it, I'm out of it.
Where does winning at all costs come into it for you?
It comes into me. I'm very competitive.
Yeah.
So collectively as a squad, I know everything goes around winning, you know. So the main thing for this team is that we're doing well and winning. But for me to help the team in the best way I know I can is being who I am and expressing myself and playing with that smile on my face and showing my personality.
Did it get to a point where Schmidt sat down with you and said, look, you're doing X, Y and Z, but I need you to do other things to get in my team? Was it? Did you have a conversation like that?
No, there wasn't any specific conversations. Okay. It's just what Joe or the rest of the coaching staff, they demand certain aspects of your game to be at a higher level, and that's ruck hitting, that's, you know, tackle technique, that's high ball, that's passing, everything, you know. Yeah. But the things that I was capable of doing on the pitch and probably weren't always the ones that he wanted the most.
Because with you and Joe and Ireland, like in the 2014 Six Nations, you don't play a minute. It's Dave Kearney and Trimble on the wings, both excellent players, but not quite risk takers in the way you're a risk taker. And then the 2015 World Cup, you don't play against France, you don't play against Argentina, those big games. So since then you've played more. Do you feel like Joe maybe has more of an appreciation of what it is you bring to the team now? And maybe could you see yourself in the 15 jersey for Ireland at some stage in the future?
I've played a lot of fullback for Munster this year and I've really enjoyed it. 15 jersey is probably my favourite position now.
Right. You get more of the ball?
Yeah, more of the ball. I can influence the game more as opposed to being on the wing. So, yeah, I'm enjoying my time at fullback, and if the time comes where I get the opportunity to wear 15 for Ireland, I'd be delighted.
I was wondering if you and Joe had ever had a sit down.
No.
Simon, if you're going to be my guy.
Yeah, I knew basically what I had to do if I was going to ever be involved in Irish squads again, and I had to tighten up a few areas. And
what was the biggest area as a matter of interest?
Rooks. Ruck hitting.
Hitting rooks.
And I'm not by nowhere near an expert at that area, or tackle technique, or, you know, it's just, there's a lot of areas, like what I would have considered in the past to be more important than ruck hitting.
Ruck hitting, yeah. So on a given ruck, do you have a man to hit, or do you have to know which ruck you're hitting? Is that the biggest
thing? Both, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have to get your head around that.
Yeah. And I am a long way from being polished in hitting rooks, but having said that, there's other areas of my game which are quite strong. So,
a very last point. I saw you say recently, or maybe you've said it a long time ago, you'd really like to play in France at some stage, and that's pretty much something you're determined to do at some stage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At some stage.
Yeah.
Like Munster is my home, and it'll always be my club. Like, but, you know, whether I'm 38 or 40 and I decide to go in France, but it's just something I'd love to do. I'd love to go over there, experience the lifestyle. Mm. I have a lot of family over in France.
Right.
It's like a second home to me, so.
You've been over a good bit?
Oh, I've been over every year since I was a kid,
right.
Whether it was on holidays or visiting family. But I just love it over there, and at some point I could be going over as a coach. I don't know.
So it's a lifestyle thing?
Yeah,
right.
It's lifestyle. It's experiencing the top 14 or whatever. But yeah, it's not too many jobs that you get the opportunity to change up your whole life and experience something new for a short period of time that rugby players have.
Your French is good, I presume?
Yeah, my dad would have spoke to me when I was quite young, all the way up, but yeah, I would have had a little advantage in the Leaving Cert and Junior Cert.
What did you get in the Leaving Cert in your French?
Oh, jeez. As soon as I got that piece of paper, I ripped it up because it was so bad. But A2, maybe?
A2,
A2,
right.
A2 or B1, A2.
And does your dad kind of look at you and go,
total shock and disgust, yeah. But it was my grammar. It was shocking when I was writing.
Right.
I could have a conversation with someone totally different, but
okay.
Grammatically very poor.
Listen, it's been great talking to you. Real pleasure. And best of luck with the campaign. Again, it's the Bord Gáis Energy hashtag Hurling to the Core sponsorship of the Senior Hurling Championship. You can check out Simon's video where he's talking about his relationship with hurling and striking a good ball as well, if I do say
thank
so.
Thank you very much.
No, technique is there.
It was a bit rusty.
Thanks so much for coming in and chatting. It's great.
You're really a gent. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. With Air Sport and all the BT Sport channels now free with your Air broadband bundle.